This episode is brought to you by CISO. CISO is on demand 24/6. No, I'm just kidding, 24/7. Streaming comedy anytime, anywhere, curated for the comedy connoisseur. Visit CISO.com and see CISO for yourself. Try it now for free. Do it. Do it. Why didn't they laugh?
You suck!
That's not funny.
Hi, welcome to another episode of Why Didn't They Laugh? The podcast dedicated to accepting the silence when a joke doesn't work and growing from it, not being scared of it, fighting it, having fun with it. Okay, I will give you guys a question, and I want you to honestly think which one is more possible. Do you think I got an email from a listener who is opening up a gym just for Democrats called Feel the Burn? Or did I get an email from a listener who had to watch the same Jeopardy episode as a job over and over again? I would tease that and be like, later I'll tell you, but I'm not a dickhead, so I'll just tell you. I'm not one of those radio guys that's going to manipulate your emotions, but I just wanted you to think about it. So now that you have your answer, the answer is actually the Jeopardy one. Okay, I got to read you this email, and then I got a fantastic guest, and then we'll get it going. Hey, Owen, I just listened to your Why Didn't They Laugh episode where you played Master Debaters with Chris Mancini, and I had to email you regarding the Jeopardy topic. I used to work for a startup company in San Francisco that produced interactive mobile phone games to play while you were watching your favorite TV shows and favorite sporting events. One of the games we produced was a Jeopardy game that would ask you the same question on your phone as Trebek was reading them on TV, and you had until the first person answered on the show to choose what you believed to be the right answer from a list of answers on your phone. I was actually one of three lead game testers on the product, so I had to watch the same episode of Jeopardy twice an hour for 8 hours a day, 5 days a week, for a month, while I was testing it on every type of mobile device that was available at the time. At the end of the testing phase, just for laughs, my boss took all the questions that were asked on the episode and made a test for all three of us to take, and all three of us did terribly. And we concluded that it's because when you rewatch an episode, you don't learn the facts, you learn the patterns and order of questions, and then memorize the answers for the pattern. But when the order of questions is changed, then you have to rely on what you actually learned versus what you memorized. I'm sure we all had higher scores when we would have had higher scores than we would have had before we started watching the episode, but we didn't ace the test as we all expected we would. I just thought I'd share that because it tied in perfectly with the topic. And since I can't ever imagine listening to another podcast where my Jeopardy job will be a relevant topic, I figured I had something to say. Thanks again. Awesome podcast. Thanks for reading the letter. Okay, sweet. Awesome. Dude rules. Because I did a thing where I was talking about how my wife and I will watch Jeopardy and see who gets more right. But then we watch again. It's called the, what do we call it? What's it called? It's so ironic that I don't remember the word about remembering things. Recall round? No, the absorption round? I don't know. Like, who remembers more?
Mm-hmm.
And one of the debate topics was which one is the real winner. And so I can't believe that guy did that for a living. That's insane. We have a great guest, Shane Moss. How are you?
I'm wonderful. Great to see you again. It's been too long.
It is. Tall people have to stick together.
Yeah, we really do.
How tall are you?
I'm about 6'4", close to it.
That's a great height, man.
Yeah, I like right around 6'3 and a half there, about perfect for me.
That's a great height.
6'5 in heels. How tall are you?
You're 6'1 when you like don't want to be somewhere.
Yeah, when I'm like real depressed and slouchy.
Do you slouch?
I don't have the best posture. I'm not sure that I slouch. I mean, I certainly
don't. Well, judging by your defensiveness, I think you slouch.
Well, listen, buddy. I can sit up straight if I want to. I'm a big boy.
Do you think you have more in common with other tall people or other white people?
Other white people, for sure.
See, I'm going tall. I've had experiences where I see other tall people of different races, and I almost am like, oh, thank God that guy's here.
I don't really like other tall people. I don't like when people are taller than me.
Right.
I discriminate against those people. I'm kind of like, wait,
I'm taller than you.
What are you doing up there?
I'm 6'7".
Yeah, see, I don't care for it.
Really?
Yeah, it makes me uncomfortable.
It does.
Yeah. That's
see, it makes me feel
safe.
It
makes me a little bigoted in that way. But do you, when someone's taller than you,
I feel safe. I feel like I.
How often does that happen that you run into?
There was a scene in The House Bunny when I was with Shaq, and I was wearing a top hat, and he was taller than my top hat. Mm-hmm. To put that in perspective, that's insane.
Yeah.
I'm ridiculously tall, and I was wearing a top hat, and he was above the top hat. And I remember feeling like, this is great. Like, is this how like people feel around me? And I was like, I almost just wanted to be like, tell me it's going to be okay.
I think there are studies where taller men tend to do better in job interviews and all that sort of thing. But
yeah, but it's only
specific
jobs, though. Definitely not in acting.
Yeah, I'm not, definitely not in acting, and I'm not at all familiar with the studies. I'm kind of talking out of my ass right now.
Well, you can manipulate any study.
Yeah.
Like, I'm trying to, like, the whole, like, they proved, like, no one knows who they is.
Right.
They is the new clergy.
Yeah.
It really is. It's like, they proved. The thing that really threw me, the thing that, like, proved this for me is the study with mice and cocaine. Uh-huh. Were like mice.
I had a guy I have a science podcast, and I had a guy who studies cocaine on mice.
Interesting.
Did you see what happened?
Did you see what happened where mice they would do it till they died, but only in captivity. And when they weren't in high stress situations, they were like doing a couple rails and then bailing.
Yeah.
And that to me like proves the whole problem with science.
Yeah, well, they're pretty aware of that. I mean, scientists are pretty humble people. I have them on very rarely. Do I meet anyone, Eric? Like I just had I got an email from a scientist today from my last podcast was about depression. It was a fantastic episode.
Well, what's the name of the podcast? Tell people.
Here We Are.
Nice.
And it was this fantastic episode, made these fantastic points. This guy did this really great work, very thoughtful. And he was like, oh, man, he must have listened back to it or whatever. He's like, oh, I'm glad I didn't embarrass myself. I thought I sounded like an idiot and stuff. And
really?
This is very common. They all think they're like, they're all so unsure. I mean, these people are experts in their field, and they're still like very unsure of themselves. And then I'll talk with someone.
But do you think that's socially they're unsure, but in that one niche they think they're gods?
I don't think so. I think that they're worried that other people in that niche are going to, I mean, the peer review process is just a nightmare for these people. They turn in these publications
right.
And everyone has something to say about it. I'll have someone on that talking about like evolutionary psychology.
Right.
And they make these great convincing arguments. And then I'll have a sociologist on a month later talking about the same topic, dating or something, for example, and they'll say something completely fucking different. And they're both scientists. They are both bright people that work very hard and know their stuff. And they're also saying two complete opposite things.
Yeah. They're almost like rappers in that sense though, 'cause they got to stay with like their truth. That's why I know what you're saying about
you're right.
'Cause I was raised by college professors. So I was around a similar sense of, I know what you're saying. I do agree with you on the ridiculously humbling nature of peer review and about like, trying to get tenure and trying to get published and trying to, get your PhD and all that stuff. Like, I know how that's like humbling. People are like, oh, what if I, but there's also a weird scar tissue that's created of insane ego where people are like, they'll stand behind their data even when they start realizing they're wrong.
Yeah,
because
to
backtrack is to, because science is all about proving the truth, quote unquote,
right.
And it's almost starting, in my view, becoming a religious.
Yeah, I mean, if you read books like, say, Chaos, is this really good book? And it's a lot about like fractals and theoretical physics and all that stuff. But it's everyone that makes these big breakthroughs are like renegades, you know, that really go against the mainstream.
Yeah, the history of science is riddled with institutional ignorance.
Einstein was a terrible student who was, he was a patent clerk.
Dude, Galileo was supposed to kill himself.
Yeah.
Like literally, it's like all these, and by the way, Einstein, by the end of his career, was fighting with the young renegades.
Right.
Like when he was like, God doesn't play chess, when they're trying to talk about how at subatomic levels, things don't add up the way he thought they did.
Quantum physics.
Yeah,
right.
He started being like,
Doesn't roll dice. These damn kids. Yeah.
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 And,
yeah,
so, and Newton's people were like that with him, you know, the whole universe ether and stuff. When he started talking about relativity, they're like, this young asshole with an afro.
Yeah, so, well, that's his whole thing was that they kept on trying to patent this idea of ether, and Einstein was a patent clerk, and he didn't understand what the fuck they're talking about. And he's like, well, what is this? Explain it. And, like, no one could explain it. And he's like, I don't think it's a thing. And then he came up with relativity from there.
Yeah, I'm like that with money. I still can't. No one can really explain it to me properly.
Yeah, well, it's so interesting how much of our life is based on these subjective realities, not objective like laws of physics or biology that are independent of our human mind, but they're subjective. They're based on opinions, these ideas. Even
stories.
Like a corporation is called legal fiction. It's a thing that doesn't actually exist. Like, McDonald's doesn't actually exist.
And the irony is, corporation comes from the word corpus, which means body. It's almost like an ironic little joke.
Yeah, yeah. And
there's
they
no
have,
body.
Like, the rights of people and stuff, but you can't put them in jail.
Limited liability.
Yeah,
it's an
yeah.
organism with no actual repercussions.
Right. And some of this was necessary because people wouldn't take chances and investments if you know, they were going to end up being broken in the poorhouse.
Yeah, like the tulip fiasco in Holland.
Right. I don't know. I mean, one thing that I will say is I've had guests on my show that are bold sometimes, but that's so rare. And they're so, I mean, this is a podcast that I'm doing. I'm a comedian. It's not like, you know, they're not going to lose their tenure because they like misquote, you know.
Well, look at that one guy, though. That one guy said that and got fired that women shouldn't, because you fall in love with women in the laboratories. Remember that dude?
Oh,
he had a Nobel Prize and he got fired.
Yeah.
And he was making a joke about his wife. Like, he married his wife we met in a lab, and it's like he got annihilated.
Yeah, the PC stuff is like a pretty bad issue on
see,
college
See, that's
campuses.
Why I'm starting to get pissed off at scientists, because they're starting to enter the horrible world of politics. Mm-hmm. You know, I see that with Neil deGrasse Tyson sometimes. Like, he's annoying.
He is.
Like, he'll talk, you know, the gun deaths and all that shit. I want to be like, listen, I've never even shot a gun, but I'm starting to find myself defending gun people.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, you blatantly know that 30,000 of these people at suicide every year. Like, you're skewing the facts. Like, everyone knows what you're doing, asshole.
Right.
You know, it's like, and then he'll do these, like, he did some tweet about how no animal forces sex or some shit. I was like, you blatantly know that's not true.
Yeah.
Ducks rape so much they have 15-inch weird dicks.
Corkscrew penises.
You get it, man. I've been waiting so long for someone else to know.
Yeah.
You know about fucking duck dicks.
Yeah. I sure do. Corkscrew penises.
Dude, you're the man.
Yeah.
I got to play this.
Do you know that females can like, straight...
Multiple vaginas?
Well, females have the... They've like built a maze inside their vagina. If there's a guy that they like, they straighten their back out.
Bro, so I have a bit called Party Pussy.
Oh, really?
Dude, you got to listen to my episode. It might be called Ducks, because that's like my white whale joke that I chase and no one ever really truly laughs.
Yeah.
Where I just keep trying to explain this genitalia arms race.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that everyone's going to be like, no way. But they're either like disgusted or they don't believe me.
I had something about bird penises one time, and I don't quite, I don't remember what it was. No, I don't think so. I think I just explained it, how weird it is that ducks have penises because they're not aerodynamic at all.
Yeah.
I just explained the evolution of it. I don't remember exactly what the jokes were, but it was something about how most ducks just have, or most birds rather, have just a hole. Males have a hole, and they do this like coital kiss thing.
They
touch holes.
It's like everybody's a lesbian in the bird community.
Yeah, and it happened with some insect that just like drops its sperm. And then the female just like dips her vagina in the pool of sperm,
yeah.
and and my bit was about how the problem with that is like it's so easy that then everyone wants to do it. So then another guy will be like, well, hey, why don't we, and then they do like this coital kiss thing, right?
Yeah.
And then so now everyone's doing this coital kiss thing, and then if some dude can have an adaptation where he just has like a little bump on there, you know, just to get it in a little further.
Yeah.
You know, then that evolves, and that's how the penis evolves. And so I just walked everything through the evolution of the duck corkscrew penis. I don't remember the wording, but it was just like one of those things that you riff on, you know, you think is interesting, so you just riff on it.
Oh, yeah, that's my whole career.
People look at you strange.
Have you ever logged into a streaming service and spent more time looking for something to watch than watching a show? Netflix. That won't happen with CISO. CISO is curated comedy for people like you. CISO for yourself. CISO's got all 40 seasons of Saturday Night Live. You know, the show that kept my father and mine relationship strong through the 80s and 90s. The entire Monty Python library. All of the Kids in the Hall, straight out of Canada, yo. Parks and Rec, both versions of The Office, Steve Carell and Ricky Gervais. And hilarious brand new exclusive stand-up and series from people like the Upright Citizens Brigade, Cameron Esposito, Dan Harmon, Scott Ackerman, and Jonah Ray every single week. Plus, it's 100% ad-free, unlike my show, because I'm reading an ad right now. Costs $3.99 a month. That's it. You get no ads. Remember when you could go to the video store and you could walk down the comedy section? It's like that, but better. There's no late fees, and there's no creepy people staring at you, possibly going to molest you, in their van. Sorry, I'm from a weird town. Go to CISO.com and start watching all the comedy you can stream for free. CISO's got all the NBC's late night shows the next day, right after they happen, and new stand-up every day of every year. Plus, original series from the funniest people on Earth, and Mars, and the Moon, because there's no people on any of those, so it's easy just to acquire more titles like that. All for just $3.99 a month. That's less than five Snickers bars. That's a cheap beer with no tip. All the best comedy in one place. Go to CISO.com, only $3.99 a month with no ads. No joke. There's jokes. The only non-joke is that. Other than that, there's jokes. I think people forget how much time has passed. Mm-hmm. That's why they don't always like understand evolution.
Yeah.
Because it's like so much time has passed that the littlest things, like there's been just so many countless generations of ducks that the tiniest little corkscrew of a dick will give them just a slight advantage,
yeah.
And then it just keeps getting bigger and bigger and bigger until they have these massive cocks.
You would like a book called The Red Queen, which is basically kind of this...
Is it about a gay Native American?
No.
That's the kind of jokes I bring.
That's a solid one. It's about kind of these arms races and evolution. So the female gets a... trickier vagina to get into,
yeah.
The guy grows a trickier penis, and those genes pass on, and same thing with predator and prey. You know, the predator gains an advantage, all the prey go away, the prey that gains some advantage over the predator pass their genes on, and now the predators can't catch them or whatever anymore, and so then the only ones that survive are the ones that can catch it. But what happens is you end up it's the Red Queen is from Alice in Wonderland, and she's running, and they're not moving or anything. They're just running very quickly, and Alice is like, why are we running? We're not getting anywhere. And the Red Queen said, it takes all the running we can do just to stay in the same place.
Interesting.
And that's how evolution works.
It's also how marketing works. I've noticed that with social media. It's like when things go viral. It's almost like watching evolution happen at such a rapid pace, because it's almost like the networks develop an inoculation to that virus. Mm-hmm. Where back in the day, people would just tag like Britney Spears, pussy, sex, fuck on YouTube and could just get millions of hits. And then it's almost like the machine is now the earth, where it just starts like the algorithms catch on and they're like, not anymore, bitch. Now you got to do a different thing. And then you have to just keep, it's like, oh, you got to get Snapchat now. There's a new thing where it's just one word. You can only transmit one word, you know?
Right.
And
our brains adjusted and adapted to it as well. There's
so
like
much
banner blindness. When the internet first came out, every ad was like this big blinking thing. And like, hey, look at me. I'm blinking. This is important. Yeah. There's a sale for Christmas or whatever it might be. And then people developed this banner blindness. Now, if something was blinking, they would just close it off from their perception. You know, they would just completely ignore it.
It's like multicams. Like back in the day, they played canned laughter. The audience at home is like, oh, this must be funny. And people over time started to almost have the opposite effect where they're like, that canned laughter means it's not funny. Like they're manipulating us. It's just like in Vegas, like when people are handing out flyers, no one's taking them anymore.
Right, right. Exactly.
Okay, this is me and my brother in a car. And this is an idea he has. And I want to know what you think as a member of the science community, if this is possible.
Until we can control people's urges, that'll be like if that, see that tower up there?
Yeah.
What if it becomes like an urge tower? Where like we have urge towers that can like, if you're within them, it's safer, crime's way down, but it controls your urge. Like you don't want to like pipe out chicks and right. Like control like the urge tower. Like it's like, yeah, you actually pay more to live in an urge tower area. Like, yes, please control my urges.
I mean, Biebs is impressive. Look at those hawks.
Yeah, and the video keeps going on. And as he's describing the urge tower, he keeps being like, look at that hawk. Did you see that deer over there? Like, my brother is he's a straight-up predator, but in a really lovable way. He's about to have his third kid.
Yeah.
Do you think you can make an urge tower where you live in an area where someone can turn off your desires?
No, I don't think so. I mean, but I think that there are ways that this will happen. I think that mindfulness is pretty important, and meditation seems to help people control their urges and kind of step back from themselves and see and recognize some of these urges and frustrations and feelings for what they are, and kind of it makes them dissipate once people are able to label these things. And they have they do MRIs on people that, you know,
who the
Buddhist
fuck
monks
is they?
Or whatever.
I'm just kidding. Okay.
There has been MRI tests where they give MRIs to people that are meditating. There's like this guy Richard Davidson who does a lot of meditation neuroscience work, and there is some change in some beta wave or something like that. I'm not terribly familiar with the work. Something that is somewhat positive, right? And activates more of you can embolden your prefrontal cortex, which does a lot of your impulse control.
Right.
And so there would be ways to prime this. What if it's proven, quote unquote, which it basically is at this point, that things like meditation, things like exercise are very important for your mental health and your ability to control yourself. Well, maybe the government would then have some sort of mandate where if you wanted this tax deduction or whatever, you would wear this Fitbit sort of thing that would be monitoring your brainwaves to make sure that you're meditating enough or whatever else. Something like that could be like a close version.
What if some people get in flow, that flow state, by doing cocaine?
I know. Well, I mean, yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I've been in situations, I'm not a big cocaine user myself, but I have been in situations where I've dabbled.
Mm-hmm.
And there's something very,
I dabble.
There's something very meditative about being like, crush it up, like line it out. You know, like you're like doing these things and then you just are like, this is destructive to my health, but it's I'm in a flow state.
Do you have a poor attention span, do you think?
I mean, I'm prescribed Adderall, but I don't know what it's like to be anyone else.
Right, of course.
So I mean, some people are like, you have a hard time learning Mandarin from this book. It's like, does anyone have an easy time with that?
Yeah, right. I think that I fit a lot of the qualifications for like ADHD or whatever.
But don't all of us? Like, aren't we all kind of bipolar,
I
kind
think
of
so.
Fucking depressed, kind of happy?
But it's strange. The reason why I bring it up is because when I do cocaine, I usually feel very, very relaxed, which is the opposite of what cocaine is.
That
kind
happens
of
to me with Adderall.
With people.
Yeah, it kind of does
it's
that
to me.
It's
meant to be speed.
Totally. I'm very similar to that.
You know, it's meant to like get you worked up and whatnot.
Right.
I don't get that at all. I get very, very relaxed and like calm.
That's so interesting.
And focused.
Yeah. Like if I do a ton, I can get jacked up.
Yeah,
but
yeah,
like,
yeah, of course.
I know people that'll do like 20 milligrams of Adderall and be off the walls. Mm. I do 20 milligrams of Adderall. I'm like not talking that much. I'm like really focused on what someone's saying.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I'm like you. I think that's a type of brain.
Yeah, I think so. It seems that there's these bits. It's not that your brain's like overactive, like looking for more things to pay attention to. It seems like there's this part related to focus that's sometimes that dampens down easily in those brains, and that's and speed picks it up, and that's why if someone who needs it takes speed, it does help them focus. Whereas if someone that doesn't need it takes speed, it makes them all over the place, has
right.
kind of the opposite effect.
But do you think it has? It's definitely bad for your health, though, doesn't it? Kind of like speed. Like
I think so.
My worry is that it ages you. I feel like anything that makes you go faster, it's almost like opposite of being Benjamin Buttons.
Yeah, I think so. I think it also is I'm skeptical of anything at all that makes me feel good.
Were you raised Catholic?
I was, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's a pretty simple rule that I have with like I'm way, way into psychedelics.
Yeah,
because they don't make me feel good. They make me think, you know, and they make me.
Dude,
they're not an escape. They're an inward journey, and I kind of like when I go through a rough patch. When people talk about bad trips, I'm like, no, that's therapy.
Yeah.
You just learned about yourself. Some things you learn about yourself are a little troubling or embarrassing, or
yeah,
you know, you don't want to face it, but that's what it was.
Yeah, for me with psychedelics, my worry is I don't know where they're coming from. So that's why I haven't done mushrooms or acid since high school. Or no, college I did mushrooms.
Really?
I did mushrooms in college.
I think they're an adult drug.
Really?
I do, yeah.
I always had a good time with it. Like, I'd have friends that would be like, we're all just, you know, in boxes, numbered. And I'd be like, I can paint in the sky, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I would always go the other direction. I never really had a bad experience, but...
Yeah, I've had very few bad experiences. I've done a lot.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Like, how much is a lot?
Well, I've probably done mushrooms like 70 times. I've done acid probably 15 times or so, but I'm picking up. I'm doing more.
You ever done DMT?
I've done DMT about 60 times.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
What's that like?
It's amazing. It's the most amazing thing that there is. There's nothing more interesting than DMT.
Doesn't your Catholic brain be like, this is too amazing?
No, I rebelled against my Catholic upbringing.
I don't believe in any of that Catholic shit, but just because I was exposed to it as a kid, like even tonight, like my wife and I were both, like I had a Jewish grandmother, but I was raised mostly Catholic, and then my mom started believing in goddesses and shit, so big swing.
Mm-hmm.
But my wife went to Catholic school and all that, and she just texted me on the way over here, make sure you text me, you get there safe. I just had this weird feeling, and I just texted her. I was like, it's because we had such a good day. I'm like, you realize there is no weird... You just feel that way because you're like, oh my God, Owen and me and Walter, our baby, went to the beach and we had this great time and we really connected. And then in her mind is like, something must go bad.
Yeah.
So she was like, when you get there, text me that you're safe. I'm like, that's so funny because that happens to me sometimes
too.
Yeah,
I mean, I am a pessimist overall, I would have to say. I can channel optimism, but I'm a pretty... I'm probably more of an existentialist than pessimist, but if I had to pick, I'd lean more toward the pessimistic side. Maybe my Catholic upbringing did have a big part to do with that. I know I felt like an alien my whole life because I didn't understand it. I didn't buy into it, and it seemed like everyone else in the world did, and I thought I was crazy.
I don't even think they buy into it. I think it's the power of ritual.
Yeah.
Because I remember I had a great aunt once who said, just because you don't believe in God doesn't mean you can't be a good Catholic.
Right.
And that really resonated with me. Where I'm like, a lot of these people don't even believe in God. They just like, they just do it over and over and over again to the point where they're just like, we're tied in with this.
And again, these are all subjective realities. It seems that our brain needs to think of these higher purposes of ways of and think of things like currency and whatnot. Dollar bills aren't perfect. Bitcoins aren't perfect. But we have to think of these ideas to kind of collect.
Do you believe in a God or a force or something bigger?
Well, I was an atheist my whole life, and that may have changed since doing DMT enough. I mean, I've seen things that I intellectually think are just in my own head, but are very, very difficult to explain. And it seems like, I mean, it's trying to tell me that it's God or, you know, this other pattern or other reality. And I'm usually like, I'm like, no, I think you're in my head and you think that you're everything because you only have access to what's in my head, which is everything to you.
Right.
And so I've had like a lot of these conversations with like these kind of quote unquote spirit-ish seeming things. And, I'm starting to just lose the arguments. I'm starting to have a hard time denying the stuff that I've seen. And it's also, it's really easy because DMT floats away like it's like a dream. And so you're like, well, maybe I just remembered that wrong. You know,
right?
And then you keep on doing it, and you're like, "No, I didn't remember it wrong." It seems to me that, like, I'll give you an example of a trip. Most of the things fade away very quickly. This is probably time 20 or so. I started seeing these silhouettes and these cartoons, like a cartoon like you'd see on TV, which is unusual because DMT is usually like a and for the listener, it's the active ingredient in ayahuasca. It's dimethyltryptamine. It's apparently what you see when you die and blah, blah, blah. It's not very well studied or understood, but,
keep your path. Why is it not studied? How are people not studying this shit?
It's a Schedule I drug, which makes it impossible to,
right.
It's makes it very, very difficult. The loopholes, I asked the guy, this guy Foster Olive, who's a neuroscientist that gives the cocaine to rats, I asked him why psychedelics weren't, and he's like, well, it's damn near impossible for us to research it, because it's a Schedule I drug. Not only that, but there's a stigma. There's just a stigma with psychedelics.
I just picture like some Russian billionaire being like, we'll set up a research facility. Let's just figure out what the hell
this
is.
I'm sure you don't know this about me, but I've been, for the last 6 months or so, I've been doing a show all about psychedelics. Now, I have my regular club act, and then I go to the little indie venues and whatnot, and I do a show all about psychedelics. And from that, I mean, it really brings all the psychonauts out of the woodwork when I show up. And so I've met people that are doing, you know, their own independent studies and getting little MRI helmets and stuff like that and recording their experiences. And it's intriguing. I mean, I do it so much because I just need to know. I need to know more.
Joe Rogan's doing a good job getting it out there.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, he talks about that a lot, and it's really interesting.
Yeah, so I started seeing these cartoons, which were peculiar. So I had this one, and the cartoons I'd always remember quite clearly. And so this is like this 50s kitchen. I feel like I could even draw it if I knew how to draw. like this... if Disney drew like a stereotypical 50s kitchen, but there's appliances and stuff that I swear I'd never seen in my life, but they were perfect.
Yeah.
I'm sure I saw them on TV or whatever, but it really seemed like Leave It to Beaver or something. It was often just these kind of very stereotypical, like these templates, which makes sense because in your brain has to have a million different templates to be like, oh, this is a table. Like a computer can't recognize that
paradigms.
This is a table. Yeah, 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 exactly. It needs to have these flexible things. Otherwise, anytime,
The president needs to be white and have a penis.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Just kidding.
Right. I mean, if I come in, like a computer can't look at your producer that it's never seen before and be like, what? It'd be like, what is that thing? But I have a template of a human being in my mind, so my brain can just go, oh, that's a human. That's a man.
Have you seen that documentary, Algorithms?
I just watched it on LSD two nights ago, actually.
Amazing. Yeah, like that first thing about recognizing faces.
Yeah,
how they just
yeah,
that's interesting.
But that's the kind of processing that it has to do. It's, if you see it, it's scanning very slowly.
Yeah.
Our brains aren't doing that. No. Our brains are doing something else.
We're categorizing.
Exactly. And so there's this.
You got to read Sapiens. Have you read Sapiens?
Yeah, Brief History of Humankind. Fantastic.
Yeah.
One of my favorite books.
It's amazing.
Yeah, he has a course online that you can take for free. I forget if it's Coursera or it might be edX or something like that.
Yeah, I'm in.
He's fantastic.
I had Tripoli on here while I was reading it, and I was spiraling about wheat, how we're slaves to wheat.
Yeah. So you especially knew what I was talking about with subjective reality.
Oh, yeah,
so
of course.
He talks a lot about that. It's kind of the message of the book. I was very much influenced by that book. So there's this 50s kitchen, right?
Yeah.
And there's this door-to-door salesman, and he has a son, and I can't tell if this is like a metaphor and I'm supposed to be the son or something like that, but he's nervous and he doesn't want to tell him something. And then he just puts his arm out like in front of his son to like point in front of him. And then the kitchen collapses and it's revealed that he is on a movie set the whole time, his whole life. And he just didn't know it. And then I saw the universe and space and stars, like we're like, you know, the galaxies that we're all used to seeing on television and all that. And so nothing all that peculiar there. I can see how my brain can visualize that. But then the universe ripped open and there was just this flat two-dimensional pattern of like a plaid, very colorful mathematics. And then I got sucked into that. And then I was in DMT land and there's like a carnival and this woman there and you know, it's all just regular DMT craziness after that. But I do think that so if I were to really go out on a limb and be like, okay, there's definitely, let's say there's definitely a god or whatever, you know, it's a silly name for things, but that you are accessing on DMT, then what it would seem like to me is that there is this mathematical pattern that gained consciousness, and that's what God is in the universe, which there's not just this universe, there's multiverses, infinite number of multiverses bubbling up from it, and it's like this sprawling, it's kind of like the realm of possibilities, and it's as if now we have, with our stupid monkey computers that we've made, that us monkeys have made, we're able to, there's a video game where they take all the astrological data and you can fly around and look at the Milky Way and whatnot. And physicists actually play this game and have discovered things about the universe that like, oh, there must be more dust in this area because of the way the light's reflecting.
Right.
And then they have started to simulate evolution digitally by making these simple little programs and allowing them to replicate if they get these simple tasks done. And so they figured out how to kind of spawn these, and they're creating more and more complex programs on their own, kind of like in the end of algorithms when they're
an algorithm can make it can change own, on its own.
And there's, if you think about like Sims, that's replicating.
Do you think we're a sim for this like plaid two-dimensional?
Well, imagine the usefulness of it. Imagine if our computers were so powerful and our programs were so accurate and well done that it was able to be a sim for like the way things are now. And you could just be like, hey, let's see what happens when Donald Trump is president or when Hillary Clinton is president. And then you let it run. That's a zero cost way to discover and I think that could be what this universe is.
Have you watched this season of House of Cards?
Mm-hmm.
One of the coolest moments was when the guy that's into big data was like, but the thing about data is it can't represent the first time someone heard jazz.
Right,
You know what
right.
I mean? Like, that's one thing. That's one.
There are limitations.
Yeah, there's limitations. The algorithms are just these X factors that you can't possibly.
Yeah.
Like, I just heard this radio lab called Cellmates about, like, single cell organisms jumping to multi-cell has only happened one time and no one knows how, like how that we got mitochondria and all these like, like little things, like no one knows how that is. So how do you create an algorithm that can replicate like those type of like one in exponential situations.
That's just the thing. I think that you would have to kind of let it go off on its own. You'd have to foster it to.
Can you speed it up though? Because that's because the fourth dimension is time, and that's the bitch.
Right.
Like, how do you run a computer program for billions of years and have it benefit your finite life?
Yeah, I mean that's what when I see this pattern, it seems like it's like God is self-aware, but he's not, or she or whatever. It's just a thing. It's a pattern, and
Jenner is not.
Yeah, it seems like it became self-aware when it was already happening, and it doesn't know why it's here. It doesn't know why it's happening.
Right,
it just happening.
Did you watch Black Mirror or Dark Mirror?
Yeah, I did.
You see the Christmas episode with John Hamm?
Mm-hmm.
Like it's like that. Like they create these replicas. Ah, I don't want to spoil it for anyone. I got to bail on the convo. Watch Black Mirror. Is it Black Mirror?
Black Mirror.
Yeah, because this is a spoiler. So not anything I've said yet, but right. I'm not going to discuss it because it's worth watching. Mm-hmm. Where it's about replication, but you'll get what I'm saying. But yeah, I just want to know what the goals are for these things. Like that's what I understand. Mm-hmm. Like when you say useful, like what does useful mean? Not to like keep trying to redefine everything, but like when someone's like productive, you're more productive with your phone. It's like, but what am I producing?
Right, right.
That's when the sapiens fiction of money kind of kicks in, where I just take a step back and I'm like, but what is this?
Yeah, yeah.
That's why my wife and I are going to move back to Lake Placid to be with my brother and his family for at least 6 months, a year,
mm-hmm.
because I had this epiphany where I'm like, the more successful I'm getting in entertainment, the more I'm gone.
Mm-hmm.
And it just hit me. I'm like, what is this?
Yeah.
Like, what is, I mean, I still want to do comedy, podcasting, writing. I won't change my passions in any way. But it's that like monkey drive to climb like these mountains, and you're like, okay, so the more I accomplish, the more I'm desired and gone, mm-hmm. and not with my baby and my wife and right. working out and eating food and being around my family. And my brother has about to have his third child. And my parents are in their 70s, and it's like he lives in this beautiful mountain town, and I can get an acre in a 4-bedroom house for what a half of a studio costs in fucking Van Nuys. Why would I just continue on this Ponzi scheme?
Yeah.
So that, like, thinking these thoughts has led me to be like, what is productive? Like, what does that mean?
Yeah.
It means that I'm helping Geico sell insurance because people are retweeting me. Like, what the fuck is all this?
Right.
You know, and I need people at my shows so I can make a living and I can see what's funny, and because that's my passion. But at the same time, like, do I need to fucking do these like milestones that are arbitrary that I didn't even fucking invent?
Yeah, yeah, right. Yeah, one of my favorite bits in my psychedelic show is about how when Albert Hoffman discovered LSD and he first started testing it on rats, and it just says that they're having some sort of positive effect. It doesn't like specify what that is. And my bit is about how, like, I don't know
they if they keep staring at their tails.
Yeah. My bit's like, I don't know if the rat was like, hey, fuck that wheel. Huh?
That's
hilarious.
I've been
running on that thing my whole life.
That's genius, bro. That's
nowhere.
Genius. It's time to talk about sheets. Time to talk about bedding. Shop online at parachutehome.com/Owen. That's my name, yo. For new sheets, new duvets. I used to pronounce it duvet until I got a little classier. And other bedding essentials. Receive $25 off your first order by using the offer code Owen. If you needed new sheets, new bedding, why not save $25? Help out your old friend Owen. That's parachutehome.com/Owen. And save by using the offer code OWEN. Parachute is an online bedding brand based right in my home of Venice, California. Venice Beach. You ever see the movie The Doors where they're sitting on the beach? Right there. That's Venice Beach. Great sleep starts with your sheets and a good conscience, but that's on you. After that, sheets. And Parachute has created a line of everyday bedding essentials from sheets to comforters, and that'll give you superior sleep. You want a comforter. Parachute's website is straightforward. It's easy to use. Simply select the bedding items you want and have them delivered directly to your front door or your side door if you prefer that. It's easy. With free shipping, free returns, and a 30-night risk-free guarantee, you can rest easy. Parachute also gives safe sleep. They partner with the United Nations Nothing But Nets to send life-saving bed nets in the fight against malaria. Malaria is a real problem. Google it. Tons of problems. They're helping. Unlike you. Unless you buy the sheets, then you will be helping. Using the website is easy. Unboxing your items is a piece of cake. They don't have tons of those little things. Those little poppy things. They don't need that. Venice, California. My favorite products that I've used so far. I just got one set. And so far, so good, guys. Very soft, very smooth, very safe. Thread count is a marketing gimmick, just like a Hummer car. You're not in a war zone, guy. Get a Civic. You can read about it on Parachute's blog. How do you fold a fitted sheet? You can read about that on Parachute's blog. A lot of good intel, a lot of good knowledge. 40% of Americans sleep without a top sheet. What's your stance? Let's talk about politics that really matter. Where do you fall on the real issues? Top sheet. ParachuteHome.com/Ellen. Weed has that effect.
Every time I question it, all the other rats called me lazy. Fuck this.
Dude, that's a great bit.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like the rat's like, why am I running on this? Why am I climbing up Richard Gere's asshole?
Yeah, I have my own ideas about that. And I think that it's, because you've read books like Sapien and understand enough about evolution, I mean... You know,
yeah, that was my minor in college. Like, I'm obsessed with human evolution. Okay. Yeah.
Oh, fantastic.
Like, why we look the way we look.
Yeah,
why we,
yeah.
Yeah, I'm obsessed with it.
Well, we probably have a lot in common then.
Yeah.
So I think that humans are built to be flexible more than anything. If you think about human history, we were monkeys, we were apes, we were hunter-gatherers, we were, you know, potentially cavemen, potentially, you know, if we're white, we were possibly, you know, lived in igloos and shit. We've been to space.
Neuroplasticity.
Exactly. And so, and this is basically the exact same set of DNA. There, like, the difference between your and my DNA is just like almost nothing at all. The difference between my DNA and a hunter-gatherer DNA is basically nothing at all. And so, there needs to be some mechanism of kind of this understanding purpose. And everyone always asks, like, well, what's the meaning of life? Well, there couldn't possibly be a meaning of life because meaning is subjective and based on context and everything else.
I thought I was getting a huge car.
Yeah, it is. Or a bigger dick.
Right. I want a bigger dick and a shiny thing. And I want my enemies to know I'm better than that.
I think that
I want the Bravo channel.
The reason why we think we're going towards something, towards some meaning, is an illusion. Yeah. I think that the idea that there is meaning is prodding us to move forward in an arbitrary direction.
Well, it's like the Pandora myth, where it's like they let out everything except for hope. We still kept hope. You know, they opened the box and everything came out, and they closed it. The one thing we kept was hope. It's like, hope for what? But there's beauty in life, man. I got this weird DMT type God feeling when I had my son. Like, I know it sounds corny, but I was like,
no.
I kept saying I was thanking God, and I'm not religious. So I'm what is this? So that's kind of led me to kind of detach a little bit from the rat wheel. Mm-hmm. In a psychedelic manner, because how is a human being now here? Like, we went to the hospital with two people and we left with three people.
Yeah,
like, I can't explain that.
That's a good day, people's wise.
Yeah, no, we people just
number of people's wise. That's a
yeah.
Pretty
pandas aren't
day.
Feeling that. Pandas keep leaving with less.
Yeah,
that's hilarious, man. I want to listen to all your podcasts now. I do one with physics guys. Surely You're Joking.
Oh, nice.
Where we do. I haven't done the last couple episodes, but we interview like the Nobel physics people.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's fun. I love science. Like, I can tell that your brain's drawn towards that too.
Yeah, yeah. I used to really like physics. My podcast, I haven't had any physicists on. We've touched on it a little bit, but I focused mostly on life sciences, like behavioral economics, a lot of evolutionary psychology.
Give me some knowledge, man. Tell me why are we the way we are? No, I know. That's why I'm asking you such broad questions at this point. I'm like, why are we this?
I don't know, man. It's so confusing.
Do you think we're good or bad?
I don't think that means anything.
I know that's like a binary way of thinking, but like...
That's based on context. Good for what? Bad for what? I mean, death is...
But just in general.
Death is like amazing. If there wasn't death, we'd all be piled on top of one another in this landfill.
Do you think we'd be super depressed because there'd be no nothing
no
would have meaning, right?
Everyone would be, there'd just be this pile of immortals.
But even if we weren't breeding, let's say there's 1,000 of us,
right?
And we can't have children. Don't you think life would lose meaning if we were immortal? Because it's almost like the scarcity effect of economics. I know you talked about the. Like the fact that it can never go away, you start being like, well, then I am just, what is this? I think that you would have such a bigger existentialist crisis if you couldn't die.
Maybe. I also think that time is pretty relative. Like, so I think that time to life is measured in life spans. So I don't think that a mayfly that lives for 4 days has any less of a quote-unquote full life than we do. I think that if you said to a mayfly, like maybe a mayfly would be like, oh, if I could live like one more day, 2 more days, that'd be awesome. But if you told a mayfly that you could give it like 30 more days to live, a mayfly would be like, well, what the fuck would
what are you talking about?
With 30 days?
Yeah, you'd end up like emo and depressed like Twilight.
Yeah.
It'd be like the Twilight emo guy.
It would just seem insane, you know? And so we're also built to kind of measure time based on what our lifespan is. So if we were immortal, maybe our brains would be wired to measure time in an infinite way.
I feel like we'd barely move if we were immortal.
Yeah, I mean,
like jellyfish.
What's the rush?
Yeah, like the jellyfish are immortal. There's like some jellyfish that live like thousands and thousands, and they just barely move. Because you're right, it's almost like it slows everything down. There's no. It's like how city people like walk way faster than country people because they're like literally in a hurry to like get shit done.
Yeah,
mayflies are fucking sprinting all over the place.
Oh, yeah.
They're just trying to get some jizz in a puddle so something swoops down and picks it.
They're New York City.
Yeah. Would you ever live in New York City?
When I was a younger person, I thought maybe, I mean, if I got some gig or so, which is unlikely to happen because I am attempting to just be a stand-up comedian.
That's the move, man.
My life. That's what I've always been. I don't do auditions or anything like that.
I do. And they're like, you did really good. And then I don't do it.
Yeah.
I'll like get the ones that I'm perfect for. But other than that, I'm not good at shape-shifting.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely don't fancy myself an actor, that's for sure. I should probably take some classes.
You're too tall, man.
Along the way, yeah.
No, there's been times when it's like, oh, it's down to you and this other person, and this super famous dude is supposed to be your brother, and of course he's 5'6", and you look like a different fucking species.
Right.
It's like they're all small.
Yeah.
Like, there's so few, like, successful actors.
I don't get why they're so small. That must have just happened at some point. Just like some great actor.
I think a lot of actors are like, have that sociopathic mechanism of like just trying to fit in and not die.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Like a Napoleon syndrome. And so like you have to be able to like be the puffer fish. You have to be able to like act. And just like I feel like gays are amazing actors because they, when they were kids, were forced to have to like fit in and keep these secrets.
Yeah. And Jewish people and all, like looking back, a lot of my skills came from some sort of weird oppression and need to like quickly make friends and like not die.
Yeah.
Cause it's weird. People our size being in this field, because usually we were the alphas, but I wasn't an alpha growing up. I was like, felt unsafe. Felt unsafe at all times. So I had to be like, I got to get skills to make people like me fast.
Yeah.
And so
when you're tall, sometimes people are like, when you're young and you're tall, sometimes people are like, oh, I want to fight this tall guy.
Oh, totally. That still happens.
I'm this lanky bastard. So they know I don't have an ounce of muscle on me. So they like their chances.
Dude, it's jail mentality.
Right.
It's like, it's literally like, if I jack the biggest dude in this bar, some chick's going to want to touch my bump in my pants, and it's only growing evolutionarily because it's got a better chance of fucking getting my jizz to the ovulation spot.
Right.
Well, cool, man. This has been a blast.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
Where can people find more of your shit?
You can go to the herewearepodcast.com.
I'm going to be a fan, by the way.
Oh,
I'm sold. I'm sold.
Thanks.
And I'm always looking for...
It's really good. I learn a lot. I basically just line up these people, and then I just sit and listen. They do most of the work. It's not even meant to be a comedy podcast, really. It's a science podcast.
The best comedy isn't funny.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, your hamster wheel joke just made me cackle, and it's probably real.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, that's not even a joke.
Right,
like, the rat was probably like, who the fuck is profiting from this wheel?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, why are we on our phone all the time? Like, how is this efficient?
I know.
Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah, efficiency is a crazy, crazy thing. Especially if you look at people like, I don't know what your parents were like, but look, people like my dad's generation or my grandparents, where efficiency was all about work as many hours in a day as you can.
Yeah.
Well, how in the world is that efficient? If you're doing more work.
Oh, it's the worst.
And that's why everyone is
talking about getting a job. I'm like, work less.
Yeah. And people are like against napping. People are like, I'll sleep when I'm dead. Well, that's just having a poor understanding of how the non-conscious mind works and how you form memories and learn things.
I get in so many arguments with people about this because they're like, well, it must be nice to come from money. I'm like, oh, you mean one teacher's salary? I'm not from money, man. I'm like, I know how to not have shit.
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
right.
When I first moved to LA, I lived in a studio with two other guys and I had a 91 Plymouth Acclaim that was worth nothing.
Right.
And so that allowed me to work so little that I could pursue comedy. And everyone's like, well, it must be nice. It's like, it's because you need shit.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't need shit. I can always cut off fucking limbs to keep the blood near the heart.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, I did a lot of factory work. I've worked in factories.
Like
5-6 years working in factories, and people talk about like creating jobs. And it's like, what jobs? So this robot takes this job and does it efficiently, so a human doesn't need to do it anymore.
Right.
That's a win. Why is it that then you're like, well, no, we got to find something.
Because money's a Ponzi scheme.
To do. Why are we finding something for that person to do? We just won. We beat it. Why are we creating jobs?
We need to eliminate jobs. Exactly.
We need to eliminate jobs. And no one's fucking saying that.
Yeah, it's a fact.
People say you're lazy if you fucking don't want to go and work in some fucking shithole factory cranking out a bunch of shit that no one even needs.
Exactly,
anyway.
Man.
It's crazy.
Because it's a Ponzi scheme. The entire economy is a Ponzi scheme.
Yeah.
Where it has to expand or else it'll collapse. And it's like, oh, well, we need more jobs. It's like, I want the president that's like, we just cut 5 million jobs.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's like, you can fucking get by.
Yeah,
you can.
Yeah.
And it's all about community. A lot of poor people are in rough positions because they don't have a powerful community to help each other.
I think full-time employment should be 30 hours a week, maybe. That would be a good compromise for now. 30 hours a week. If you want to work more, if you want a second job, knock yourself out.
Right.
You know?
or do something you love, like what we're doing.
Right.
Like, I'll work 80 hours, and it doesn't feel like work whatsoever.
Right,
I'm like,
right.
Oh, I'm just writing and tweaking and talking to my friends. And, like, that to me, that's heaven. I think people need to – some people don't have intrinsic passions, and I totally understand that too. But it's like, I just don't understand this fetish of shit. Like, everyone's piling shit on themselves.
Yeah.
Like, you don't need, like, just find a community, and everyone's like, oh, must be nice. I love the must be nice argument. Like, I fucking didn't grow up, and I collected cans as a kid so that I could go to college. Like, we used to go from dorm to dorm. My mom would drive me, and I would just collect cans. And nickel by nickel, I saved the shit. And that's not like a boo-hoo story. It was one of the funnest times. I was like, there's free money in the garbage.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like, fuck
it. Yeah, yeah.
People are just, you know, it's not even that you're right. It's not that they're lazy. It's just that the problem is the combination of being lazy and a consumer. That's where they're fucked. It's like, you don't need a flat screen. You don't need more than one pair of shoes. Like, you can just get by, you know?
And this is like going back to the idea of mindfulness and say you get paid to exercise and meditate eventually, you know, and that could be scary as well. But if people are informed that, like, I know what you think. My consciousness is saying I need a big house with a pool so I can get blowjobs all day long. Two, my brain also says that, but the research shows that after you make something like $150,000 a year, there are diminishing returns.
Diminished blowjobs.
Yeah, there's diminishing returns yeah. on your overall well-being. The research shows that active leisure is better than passive leisure, like taking a hike rather than watching TV, is going to be better for your overall well-being. The research shows that most of the time, other than like celebrating something, if you buy yourself a gift to celebrate some accomplishment, that might help. But other than that, material goods don't really do anything. For if you do want to spend your money on something, take a vacation is what the research shows. Go
or
and
get
see
great
more.
Food.
Get great food. Have experiences.
I spend a fuckload of money
social,
on food.
Yeah, so do I.
Honestly. I literally like today. My we ate out twice
on.
Today.
I have roommates. I live in a dump. I have a dumpy car. I don't give a fuck. I don't
yeah,
need
fuck
any
it.
Of that. But I eat out all the time. I'm
yeah.
a foodie.
Dude, that's what matters.
Yeah.
You are what you eat.
yeah.
So cool, man. So
ShaneMoss.com. And I have a psychedelic show. It's called A Good Trip. So if you look on my schedule, if it says A Good Trip, that means it's my psychedelic show. I'm doing it coming up in like... Birmingham, Alabama, and all around like North Carolina and the Southeast. And then I've been doing it a bunch. I'm trying to line up like a 40 city tour for the fall. So that'll be.
Do you have a van?
Happening soon. I want a van. So
I want a
bad,
van too.
Man.
I'm looking nonstop.
I want to get a van and not have a house anymore. Maybe a storage unit. Or I like my situation that I'm at right now because it's basically a storage unit. With
what about that one of those Airstream things?
Yeah, I actually have an engineer friend who makes furniture. On the side, just for fun, and he always wanted to pimp out the inside of a van, and now he just had his first kid, and his wife won't let him like spend money on a van to
you
go
gotta
camping
get a van.
And whatnot. He said that if I buy a van and buy the materials, he'll build it all out for me.
Can
for
I get
free.
In on this?
Probably, oh. Yeah.
I mean, I'm obsessed with vans.
I want a van so bad.
Me too. I've been
it's
like
weird to tell people about.
No, because like I've been trying to buy a used SUV to like be able to transport
yeah,
everyone,
dude.
And I just keep getting drawn towards vans.
Yeah. It's imagine you're driving to your gig. You got a 4 hour.
I already know where you're going with
6 this. 6 hour, 8 hour drive.
Pull
whatever.
Over.
You have a fucking awesome
yeah.
idea.
Yep.
You pull over at a rest stop. You write for 30 minutes.
Bingo.
You do take a nap, maybe.
Yep.
Boom. Back on the road. That sounds like the life.
Literally
me.
Sounds unbelievably
yeah,
sweet.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, can you bring your keyboard to this gig? Be like, yeah, and my wife and baby and three dogs. No yeah. problem. I got a fucking van.
Yeah. I want a van so bad.
Yeah.
I have a lot of van dreams.
Me too. Have you
really
seen those
do.
Like old Mercedes tour kind of buses? You can get them fucking cheap.
Yeah.
I know they're Mercedes, so it sounds daunting, but it's really not. You can like, they have a bunch of like rows of seats, but you can just gut that shit.
Yeah. I think there's some like industrial vans that have something like a 200,000 mile warranty on them or
Jesus.
Like 10 year, 200,000 mile warranty. That just, it's just nothing. It's
dude,
just
Toyota,
the van. It's just scratch.
I wish Toyota made a van. Toyota Highlanders, I looked up. There's one that's broken 500,000 miles on AutoTrader.
Mm.
Yeah, because that's what I look. I always go highest miles, and I like to see who's fallen.
Yeah. Because
I was looking that's at, like, good, yeah. Volvo SUVs for the safety and all that shit, and they look cool, but, I mean, they're sometimes breaking 200,000. Toyota, those fucking Asians know how to make efficiency.
Yeah. They sure do.
Yeah, it's
I
like,
have a Hyundai.
Yeah, I drove a Camry for 9 years. It never did shit.
I had a 95 Honda Civic stick shift that I had 250,000 miles on it and drove perfectly until I totaled it.
Nice. You totaled it staring at a van.
Yeah.
Amy just did a new website for me, hugepianist.com. I have a bunch of gigs coming up. Chicago Improv this weekend, tomorrow, Friday, Saturday. Boston, I'm doing Laughs. May 13th, 14th, and then I'm doing Oswego, New York, May 21st, and then some other, Oklahoma, I'm doing a casino, May 28th, and Gotham Comedy, June 24th, that weekend. Go to, hugepianist.com, because I'm tall and play piano. I also have a forum there if you want to write shit. We just set it up yesterday, so I don't really know, but Amy's so fucking smart. She's a structural engineer. Quit because we had a baby staying home. She's really having a blast. Never seen her happier, but she's still kind of a worker bee. So she just taught herself how to make fucking web designs. Subscribe to this podcast, rate it, you know, spread it, because the algorithms make us. The algorithms are out there, guys. They're pushing this shit. So if you hit the 4-star, 5-star, even 1-star, even if you don't like it, do it. We just have to show the machines that we're active. That way we can keep spinning the hamster wheel and I can spend more time with my family. So, yeah, do that shit and check out Shane. Dude's a genius. All right, much love. Peace.
Thanks, man.